From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The biggest obstacle for a group of physicians who are trying to get Utahns to start paying serious attention to air pollution is going to be keeping the focus on the issue. In Utah, brown, gunky inversions have come to be thought of as a natural part of winter and summer. So getting people to see the danger differently will be crucial in the physicians' campaign. Their warning, issued this week, is unambiguous. Air pollution in Utah, they say, is doing irreparable harm to people's health. And it's going to take some drastic changes in policy and behavior to begin to resolve the problem. Today in the program, we're talking about Utah's air pollution, about the health questions at stake, and we're asking a critical question at the heart of the matter. Does Utah have the political and the social will to do something about it? We invite you to join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In Utah, an inversion is as much a part of the summer and the winter as heat and cold. And there's always a good bit of griping about it. Despite the warnings about health, there hasn't really been, though, a serious conversation about the real dangers in an inversion or in air pollution in general, or what could be done about it, what kinds of policies could help things, or what kinds of changes in behavior would help. This week, a group of physicians began a campaign to get Utahns to start thinking seriously about air pollution, and their warning was clear. This is more than a problem, they say. It's a crisis on the verge of being a health catastrophe. Today in the program, we're talking about Utah's air, about the questions of health, the matters of policy, the recommendations to deal with all of this, and we're asking what may be the most difficult question of all. Does Utah have the will, the political will, the cultural will to do something about all of this? We invite you to join us. 585 West is the number, 585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us here in the studio is Dr. Brian Mensch, a physician at LDS Hospital, former instructor of anesthesia at Harvard Medical School, along with several other physicians. As we mentioned, Mensch has formed the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. And Dr. Mensch, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I want to begin by asking you, what was you organized this group of physicians, as I understand it, I guess it was last summer. What was the clincher?
It was a little more recent than that.
Was it?
Yeah.
So the question really is, what was the clincher moment for you? That is, what is it that got you thinking, you know, we've really got to do something about this and I need to start sort of organizing colleagues?
Well, for me, I think there were a couple of tipping points. One was about 8 years ago when I received a phone call from my wife that our daughter had cancer. And I can tell you that there is never a moment in your life quite like that, and nothing will sear your brain quite like that kind of a message. And so over the ensuing couple of months, my daughter and I pored over the medical literature to try and find out what would be the best thing for her to do. And in the course of doing that, we found out an awful lot of information about cancer in general. One of the things that we found out was that 80% of cancer is environmentally caused. We continued to be active in trying to pursue information about that. And then about 2 years ago, during one of my assignments at LDS Hospital, I spent the day providing anesthesia for three infants who had brain tumors. And I just thought to myself, three little toddlers that have brain tumors, this just doesn't seem right, even though we're a tertiary care center. This seems to be too much pathology here in little kids. So then I started poring over the literature even more, and then finally this January, after I personally had lived in the Salt Lake Valley and experienced virtually a month-long period of severe temperature inversions and the pollution that goes with it, I finally said to myself, this isn't right. Something has to be done about this situation. We don't have to accept this circumstance. And why isn't anybody doing anything about it? So I had some physician friends who, in the course of casual conversations, we started to realize that we felt similarly. And over the ensuing couple of weeks, we just started deciding that, well, if anybody can do something about this, maybe we can. So then we started individually poring over all the new literature, and what we found was very alarming. And that's when we decided we needed to speak up.
Let me ask you before we get to the particulars of the literature and the science. Have you come to an answer as to why nothing is being done about this? I mean, is this a cultural matter? Is this a matter of complacency? Is this a political issue?
All of the above.
Yeah.
It's also obviously multifaceted. We think that our main obstacles to actually solving this problem can pretty easily be categorized as lifestyle habits, entrenched lifestyle habits of citizens, and the political clout of very well-financed special interest groups who are right now behind the scenes lobbying to make sure that the status quo is maintained. For example, that more coal power plants will get built, that the air pollution consequences of those will continue. So while everybody's sitting here thinking, well, this really was a bad year for air pollution, and we know it will get bad again in the summer, and we know it'll get bad again next year, what you may not realize, it will get worse. It will get even worse than it's been. In fact, much worse.
So I wonder if you could give us a sense of – I think there part of that sort of cultural sense of it, as I said, is this is a natural part of our summer. This is a natural part of our winter. But you're getting a sense that this is getting worse?
The health consequences are not natural. That is an absolute aberration.
Yeah.
There's nothing natural about it. Cancer and death, heart attacks, strokes, impaired pulmonary function, those are not natural.
How bad is it? I've heard it. Is it one of the doctors, for example, on Monday made this reference to smoking, and I'm wondering if that's an apt comparison.
It's a very good comparison. It's a very simple way to understand what the true consequences are. I kind of liken it to when the air pollution in this valley, say on an acute phase day like during an inversion, you can think of it as everybody smoking cigarettes. And that means everybody. That means adults, children, pregnant mothers, and unborn children are all sitting there smoking cigarettes in this inversion. Now, when the inversion's clear and the air quality is, quote, average, they're smoking watered-down cigarettes. Because what we've learned from the scientific literature is that the health consequences of air pollution have two prongs to them. One is the acute phase, like during these severe inversions, and the other is the chronic phase. And both have consequences. And together, they add up to be a deadly public health crisis.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation as we go along. Judy Fays is with us here in the studio, an environment reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. Judy, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We've heard concerns about the quality of air before. It's sort of a perennial conversation in some ways, something of a refrain during an inversion in particular. What's new about this physicians group and their warnings and their recommendations?
Well, I think a few things. One is that there is a lot of new literature. Even in the last 5 years, there's been quite a large volume of new studies. I think it's in the thousands at this point, linking the air pollution with health consequences. And so while we may not understand the specific mechanisms for what happens when you breathe in a little particle of air pollution and how that triggers problems in your body, we do see a very strong correlation between the rise in air pollution and early death and hospitalizations and asthma attacks, things like that. That's pretty clear. So that's one thing that's changed. I think another thing that's changed is that the regulation has changed. And that, in one respect, is a nod to the science as well, because the EPA is required to base its regulations on the health studies that it sees. On December 18th, the standard for PM2.5, which is the primary pollutant in the winter, it's microscopic particles of combustion products. That basically was cut in half or almost in half. And actually, the scientific panel that the EPA had looking at the issue wanted to cut even more than that. But the EPA, in the end, decided against it. So at any rate, we have a tougher standard now, and that is a recognition that the pollution is pretty serious. And I think – I don't really know how to explain it, but since the doctors have come out with their proposals, and actually all winter this year, there's been a steady increase in the number of emails that we've been getting, a lot of interest in the public from the public about this. I got emails from literally around the country, people who were visiting Utah during the inversion in January, saying, you know, that place is awful. College students thinking about locating here saying, you know, I see the I went and visited the while you had that pollution spell, and I don't know if I should live there. Is it dangerous? So there is a huge awareness.
Did you read any of the letters to the Readers Forum from skiers that said, came here, skied, loved the skiing, your air pollution's terrible, I'm not coming back?
Do you get a sense, Doctor, as Judy is, that it's the sense of alarm is growing? Because there's all, as I said, there's always this sort of low hum of gripe during January and February when there's that gunk in the valley. But are you sensing something different?
We've tapped into a real reservoir of frustration and anxiety about this issue. Since we held the press conference Monday, we've had just an incredible outpouring of support from the public in our effort to try and publicize this condition and to then do something about it. We held a meeting last night, more an organizational meeting, because this thing has all of a sudden exploded into such a movement that we were totally unprepared from an organizational standpoint to harvest all of the goodwill and effort and enthusiasm we received from the public. And we had people at our meeting last night from the public who came and shared with us the stories that propelled them to come. One mother shared with us the story of, I think, her 3- or 4-year-old son, who every time these inversions happen, they just are forever in and out of the hospital, and not just emergency room visits, but staying in the hospital. They are so frustrated that they are trying to figure out where they can move to. But obviously that's difficult. But she sat there with tears in her eyes and explained this to us. And we're just kind of shocked. I mean, not that we didn't know that it happened, because we work at hospitals. We know it happens. But then to see it again on the other side with, this is the daily impact on real people. This is why we're getting this outpouring of support, because people are sick of it.
May I just add something there?
Of course.
Yeah. One of the things that the doctors brought up the other day in the press conference was something that was really sobering to me. And that was, I think you made the statement actually, Brian, that if you have a child and you live in the Salt Lake Valley and you see your child becoming an Olympian one day, just forget it. Because there's new science out that suggests that if your child is growing up in a polluted environment, the air is pretty bad.
Is this the San Diego study?
Yeah, the San Diego study. They will never get better. They will never get their full lung capacity, the kind of capacity you would need to be an Olympic athlete. So I think that kind of cost is really jarring people to say to your kid that, you know, they shouldn't have those dreams, you know, because you have to live in this is, I think, a scary prospect for any parent.
Well, we should explain this is a study conducted at the University of Southern California, which showed that the implications of sort of long-term air pollution, there's irreparable harm.
Irreparable harm. The damage to these children's lungs was permanent, and it was directly proportional to the atmospheric pollution that they were exposed to. So I think it is profound for parents to think that, yes, physically it doesn't seem like day in and day out that there's any dramatic effect, unless your kid, of course, has asthma or chronic respiratory infections or something like that. But even these, quote, seemingly healthy kids are very slowly and silently being harmed significantly by this air. And one of the things – I think the study that has had the most impact on me is a study out of New York City where they followed mothers who were exposed to high levels of air pollution and then another group of mothers that were exposed to lower levels of air pollution. And they found in analyzing the DNA structure of infants born to these mothers that there was 50% more chromosomal damage to infants who were born to mothers exposed to high air pollution levels. Now, what's the implication of that? Well, we know at least that these are chromosomal damage events that will ultimately lead, in some cases, to cancers. We know so that they will also lead ultimately to all kinds of other diseases laterhood in adult life. This supports further the many other studies that show that air pollution also causes an increase in the incidence of low birth weight syndrome, SIDS, and just infant mortality. So these children are being irreparably harmed in utero right from the get-go, and a lot of the damage will never be reparable.
Seems like the primary, as we go to a break here before we do, though, seems like the primary component of your message is this is a crisis. We've got to deal with this right now. We've got to do something different.
I can't imagine anything more urgent. I was just trying to think about a little bit of the economic and budgetary implications that this has for this state. And obviously, we're talking about an issue of how do we solve it? We need to get vehicle traffic decreased. So obviously, mass transit comes into this. So we know that we're spending a lot more money on highway constructions than we are on mass transit. But nobody ever died from a road not being built. But people are dying because mass transit is not being built.
Dr. Brian Mensch is with us. He's a physician at LDS Hospital, former instructor of anesthesia at Harvard Medical School. Along with several other physicians, he has formed the group Utah Physicians for Healthy Environment. Judy Faze is with us, environment reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. We invite you to join us as well. 585-WEST is the number, 585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We're going to take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on FM 90. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about Utah's air, about the dangers, the recommendations to deal with them. We're talking about whether or not the state has the political and cultural will to do something about all of this. This week, a group of physicians began a campaign to get Utahns to start thinking seriously about air pollution. We invite you to join us at 585-WEST, 585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Dr. Brian Mensch is with us. He's with the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. Judy Faze with us, an environment reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. Let's take a call. Deidre is with us, calling from Salt Lake. Deidre, welcome.
Thanks, Doug.
Sure.
I have a question and then sort of a comment. I have noticed over like the last 3 years that I get a lot of colds in the winter, and I sort of started to notice and keep track of things, notice that they seem to correlate with when we have an inversion. And I'm now beginning to wonder if they're not really a viral cold, but that maybe my body's response to all the pollution in the air. And so I wanted to know if there's any scientific data that show that that's a cause. Is there a cause and effect relationship there? And then also just wanted to comment, you know, frustrated with the air pollution and trying to take mass transit, they've just cut my bus route from my house.
There you have it right there. As a matter of fact, yes, there is a correlation. We have an infectious disease specialist on our panel, Dr. Zell McGee, and he tells us that, yes, there is a correlation between the immunologic status of a patient and air pollution, so that, yes, you will be more susceptible to viral and bacterial infections because of the air pollution, the particulate matter, the ozone, the nitrous oxide, sulfur dioxide, and so forth. So your perception is correct.
It's also reflected at a question from Dave in an email who he writes, many of us longtime runners ignore the warnings, routinely run miles and miles outside on bad air days. Seems like there are no immediate effects, but how dangerous is it?
Well, in my assessment, the only thing sillier than that is doing it with a mask. because there isn't any way that you're going to get a – and I've seen people do that.
Sure.
There isn't any way you can get a tight enough seal to really prevent any sort or take advantage of any filtering through a mask. But as you exercise, your cardiac output goes up. And what that means is your heart is starting to pump faster and there's more blood circulation per minute throughout your entire system. You're breathing more heavily. So you're taking in more air pollution basically per minute during exercise than you are during normal activity. So yes, exercise in heavy pollution environments is certainly somewhat, if not completely, counterproductive.
Dave, glad you sent that email. Thanks very much. And Deidre, thank you very much. 585-WEST is the number to join us, 585-9378. I want to start talking a bit, Judy Faze, about some of the political dimensions to this story. Help us scope out, if you would, the political landscape here. What are those interests?
Well, I think it's maybe changing a little bit, but I think for a long time in Utah, it seems to me that anything about the environment has been ascribed to liberals. So it's something that a lot of Republicans don't really want to talk about because I think it's associated with the party that's not in power. But I do think that that's changing because everyone has to breathe the air, drink the water, and live on the land that we have here. And I think like many other movements in society, that's coming from the ground up. If you look at the budget as a planning document for our policies and our priorities in the state, the environment budget is actually, I want to say it's about 0.5% of the general fund. It's a very tiny percent for all of the environmental programs that the state is responsible for. And the state gets a lot of additional money from the federal government.
The only one that didn't get an increase this past year, is that right?
Or? I can't say what the outcome is. Okay.
Was an attempt to cut the budget, the only state agency that was up for having their budget cut.
Well, basically, in the governor's budget, there was he suggested a 3.3% decline. There were a couple of supplemental items that were added, including some air quality money. But the fact is that it's pretty flat. It's about $52 million a year. There are a lot of questions that can't be answered with a budget like that.
585-WEST, the number to join the conversation, by the way, 585-9378. Dr. Minch, you wanted to say?
Well, certainly there is a profound economic impact to this air pollution. We alluded to it earlier when we talked about letters and emails from people who just didn't want to come to the state any longer because of it. Certainly that has a significant negative impact on the whole economy. But beyond that, we can make some calculations like this. The EPA and government agents, other government agencies and private industry will attribute the economic loss of one death at about $4 million. We can say from our statistics that there are about at least 1,000 deaths along the Wasatch Front every year directly attributable to air pollution. If you times 1,000 direct – now, that's not talking about all the other deaths that may be caused by indirectly by air pollution, but directly caused by air pollution. Times that by 4 million. You already right there have an economic loss of $4 billion. Now, if you then add to that the economic impact of all the lesser health consequences like non-fatal strokes, heart attacks, congestive heart failure episodes, and then broader-based but less severe episodes like increased asthma attacks and so forth, and then the effect on the entire population of decreasing everyone's life expectancy, you have a huge economic number, almost one that you can't get your hands on. And so for anybody to think that we don't have the money to clean up our air, it is absolute fiscal insanity not to clean up our air.
585-WEST, the number to join the conversation, 585-9378. Let me bring another voice into the conversation. Representative Wayne Harper is joining us. He's the Republican representative to the Utah State House from District 43 in West Jordan, co-chair of the Transportation, Environmental Quality, and National Guard Appropriations Subcommittee. And Representative Harper is joining us by phone from his home in West Jordan. And Representative, welcome. Thanks very much for waiting and being with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you, Doug.
Let me begin by asking you, if you would, Representative, to react to the concerns of the physicians group expressed this week.
Okay. I think the physicians group has raised something that is very important. As technology has increased and improved over the last couple decades, we've been able to identify better the causes for some of the maladies and infirmities that we've had that we didn't know what the causation was. I think that they have identified something that we have been concerned about at the legislature, but have not known exactly what some of the root causes are and what needs to be done. There's some comments that have been made that, there was a cut in the money to DEQ and it was the only budget that was asked to be cut.
Let me just say DEQ is Department of Environmental Quality.
Yes.
Go ahead.
What we did as co-chairs was to ask every agency, National Guard, Transportation, Department of Environmental Quality, if we went back into recession era and if you had to cut your budget 5%, where would that cut be? And everybody came back with a variety of scenarios. We never said that we were going to cut it. But I've been in the legislature long enough to know that we've had one recession we've been through where we've had to cut over $400 million in one year and over $300 million the next year. We need to be prepared so that agencies, as they grow, have a contingency plan if they are cut back. So that was an exercise for a brand new committee. Almost everybody on that that appropriation subcommittee was brand new and needed to know what the budgets were like. So that's what we did there.
Yeah.
And then the other issue is that with the budget on DEQ, they weren't asking for very much this year. We fully funded everything that they asked for, including the three studies, the PM 2.5 study, the Great Salt Lake Mercury and Environmental Study, and then the mercury studies around the state. So everything that they came through and asked for, we funded, knowing that we needed to identify where the problem areas are and where those toxins are coming from in order to go through and have a better idea in the next couple years of where we're going to need to direct budgetary increases to address those problems.
Representative, I wanted to get a sense, if I could, from you of the, as we've been saying, the political will, whether it exists, to implement, take on some of the recommendations of the physicians group. And I wanted to start with one that seems to be one of the most difficult to swallow for some. And this is the suggestion that the state immediately implement a moratorium on the building of new coal plants, which would effectively mean, as I understand it, nixing the four now in the planning stages. How are you reacting to a concrete recommendation like that?
Well, I think some of the recommendations that the physicians came up with are very solid, and I think we're working on this. I think you've identified one of the two that is the most problematic. Going through and doing a moratorium and not having a way to go through and handle the electrical generation needs for the residents of the state of Utah and other states is going to be very difficult. If there were some other way that we could go through and say, you know, we can generate power in another fashion, we would take a look at it. But going through and potentially taking, putting, you know, thousands of people in rural Utah out of jobs for this without having a replacement mechanism, I think that's a tough sell.
You say you're supportive of some of the ideas involved here, but your big question, as I understand it, is getting the biggest bang for the buck. What do you mean by that?
Well, one of the things with the PM 2.5 study that's going to go on because right now we have a PM 10, particulate matter 10 micron standard around the country for air quality and certain health generations. New information is coming up and saying it's the smaller particulate matter is going to be as damaging, and I think the physician who spoke earlier highlighted that. So we're going to identify where the generations are, the generators of those PM 2.5 to PM 10 are, and what we can do. And I think you're going to see us go through and provide some incentives or some directions if it's industry, changing some tax credits or something like that, workover credits, whatever it may be, in order to help industry to meet those standards.
Representative, I want to ask you if you I guess about the sort of another aspect of the political dimensions to this story. Do you and your colleagues possibly have some suspicions at all about the science here? And I wonder if there's at all a parallel for you related to some of the questions surrounding global warming. I mean, do you connect this with that idea in some ways, in the sense that maybe there is sort of an overstating of the problem in your and maybe your colleagues' minds?
We receive, you know, I personally receive at least three times a week some publication, some article, some journal, some new study that comes through and supports global warming or says that it is not happening. And so, yes, there is some healthy skepticism because different scientific communities, different groups are saying one thing or another. I think the safe thing to say is we recognize that there is a problem, but we don't know exactly how to address it. And plus, we are one state and implementing federal EPA standards and directives as well. So it's kind of a mixture of things that we can do. But I think there is a problem, but we don't know exactly what it is and the best way to address it.
Do you think, Representative, the air today is as bad as it's ever been?
You know, I've listened to a couple people. I've talked to, you know, my grandmother and other people who remember back in the 20s and 30s that with all the coal and oil and wood-burning stoves in homes, that during the winter time there was thick black smoke through the air, and every spring they would have to take a putty type of stuff and wipe it down on all the walls to get the film off in the house. I think we have replaced some of that coal pollution for vehicle and industrial and other pollution that is out there. I think that on these inversion days, I think it's as bad as it's ever been, but it's not as thick and black as it was in the 20s and 30s.
Let me ask you this finally, about a minute left before we go to a break. Do you think this matter is going to have to be moved up in the minds of you and your colleagues? I mean, there's always the questions of public education, always the questions of transportation. Air pollution hasn't really measured, at least in the top 10 of priority lists, I don't think. Do you think it's going to be moved up in light of all of this?
You know, in all the surveys that I've conducted and my colleagues have conducted, the air pollution has not come out as a top 10 issue that constituents want us to address. I think that we have done some things. About 6 years ago, 7 years ago, I passed a bill that gave a tax credit for alternate fuel and clean fuel vehicles. Representative McGee ran an update of that bill this year that passed the House, didn't make it through the Senate. But I think the issues are becoming more salient, and I think that we are going to need to be addressing them as soon as we identify what are the most important ones for us to hit first.
Representative Wayne Harper, he is a Republican representative who represents District 43 in West Jordan in the Utah House of Representatives, joined us from his home in West Jordan. Representative, thanks very much for the time.
Okay, you're welcome.
585-WEST, the number to join the conversation, 585-9378, our email address, radio west@kuer.org. I'm going to take another break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on FM 90. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about Utah's air pollution, about the health questions at stake, about the recommendations to deal with the problem, and asking another critical question: do we have the political, the social will to do something about it? 585-WEST is the number, 585-9378, our email address, radio west@kuer.org. LDSHospital.org. With us in the studio is Brian Minch. He is a physician at LDS Hospital, and he is, along with another group of physicians, formed the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. Judy Fays is with us here in the studio as well, environmental reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune. Well, Dr. Minch, I wanted to get you to react to what you were hearing from Representative Wayne Harper. Support, I guess, for the ideas that you're putting out, but I wouldn't say skepticism, but a little bit of reticence there. What were you hearing?
Well, if we take this new scientific information that we have tried to deliver to the public, and we start getting bogged down in budgetary wrangling over the Department of Environmental Quality's budget and what should it be, and should we give tax breaks to a few alternative fuel cars, that's like taking a squirt gun to a forest fire. It is absolutely almost irrelevant to the real root cause of the problem, and that is we know that 65% of the air pollution in the valley is generated by vehicles. We will not change the air pollution crisis in this valley unless we get less vehicles on the road. There's virtually only one – well, there are several things we can do, and we itemized a bunch of them. But probably the biggest was mass transit has to be embraced, adopted, and funded by the government.
In the end, people are going to have to change their lifestyle.
Absolutely. Individuals are going to have to be willing to accept a little bit of inconvenience, but we're trying to help people understand what the consequences are. The consequences are profound. They are not only consequences of public health at this moment in time. We're talking about effects that will have an impact on subsequent generations. So if you take the approach that I'm not willing to be inconvenienced to clean up the air, then you're saying I'm not willing to do anything for my own kids, I'm not willing to do anything for my grandkids, and maybe even my great-grandkids. That's a pretty callous approach to life.
Judy Fays, what were you hearing in Representative Harper? I mean, there are a lot of pretty powerful interests sort of going to be engaged in this. Are you hearing the beginnings of a bit of a squabble there?
Well, I don't know if I want to call it a squabble. I think Representative Harper represented a view, a growing awareness that people do care about air pollution. The legislature has some tools at its disposal. The Division of Air Quality has, at least in my own experience, my own understanding, done a very good job of focusing on addressing health impacts versus simply just trying to meet regulations with a very limited budget. Their budget overall has been flat for the last 10 years. Their staffing has been flat for the past 10 years, unlike most other parts of state government. So they've done very well with very little. But with the increased intention and the increased awareness of the public and demand by the public that there be action, I could see that changing. And I can understand Dr. Mensch's comment, you know, that talking about a few clean fuel vehicles really isn't going to take us the distance. I think one thing you'll hear from DAQ as well is that we've found a lot of the easy fixes for air pollution.
Now, the low-hanging fruit.
It's all the low-hanging fruit's been picked, or at least a lot of it has. And so with the growing number of cars and the population in the valley, even with all the pollution improvements that have been made by cars and by power plants and all kinds of other industrial facilities, it's going to take more sacrifice, I think, by individuals as well.
So we're at the point where hard choices are going to have to be made.
Exactly.
The current level of air pollution we consider intolerable, and these are the public health consequences. But with nothing substantial being done, it will get much worse. I mean, it's hard to imagine it getting worse. than it's been, but it will get worse. We know that.
You put your hand on your head when you heard Representative Harper say that it does not appear on the top 10 priority list, at least of his constituents, and probably I don't see it anywhere near the top 10 list when you look at the priorities for Utahns. And they talk about education and they talk about gas prices and those kinds of things. How do you react to that? You're clearly frustrated there.
Well, one little bit of information that I think would be contrary to that perception is that the environment is actually the number one concern of the 18 to 26-year-old group.
So this is being expressed.
It is being expressed. And to the extent that it is not among the top two or three of older adults and so forth, that's one of the reasons why we're here. We're trying to change that perception. The environment is not just an issue of whether or not we're going to hug trees. The environment is an issue as to whether or not you and your family are sick and dying.
585 West, the number to join the conversation. Let's take a call. Kevin is with us calling from Salt Lake. Kevin, welcome.
Hi there.
Sorry for the wait, by the way.
Oh, that's great. That's fine. Thanks for taking my call today.
Sure, sure.
First, I'd like to thank Dr. Munch and his colleagues for highlighting this really important issue of public health impacts from poor air quality. And then I wanted to make a comment, and that is, and then a question. First, energy efficiency and renewable energy, from my point of view, have a significant role to play in solving this public health problem. And I think there are some signs, some early signs, that Utah does have the political will to, you know, begin to address this issue based on, for example, the issue that was brought up just recently, the some of the legislation that was passed this last session that supports increased renewable energy and energy efficiency. So could your guest just discuss the role of energy efficiency in various sectors that Utah has, from transportation to industry, and the important role of renewable energy, such as wind and solar?
Mm. Kevin, thanks for the call. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is obviously one of the biggest battles that we'll be engaged in by all the parties who have an interest here. Our contention is that the public health consequences of building more coal power plants amount to a full frontal assault on public health, pure and simple, especially in view of the fact that renewable sources of energy as a group are now as cheap as coal. Solar, wind, and geothermal as a group now are as cheap as coal. But the cost of coal has always actually been misinterpreted. It's actually been, for a long time, a rather sinister mirage to say that coal is cheap or cheaper than other sources. Because if you factor in the public health costs that thousands and millions of people incur because of coal, which you really have to do, then the price of coal goes up dramatically. And to illustrate a little bit about the economic impact of clean air pollution controls, prevention, and so forth, the Clean Air Act of the 1970s probably cost the industry in this country about $500 billion to implement. The economic payoff to the country has been reliably estimated at around $22 trillion, 40 times the cost of the original investment. That same sort of analysis can certainly be applied to the issue of coal. If we can get electricity from renewable sources that from the outset is virtually as cheap as coal, but none of the public health consequences, I can't imagine an easier decision to make.
But how realistic is that, Judy Faiz? Honestly, I mean, this is going to be an immense obstacle. The idea of a coal plant moratorium on Utah's Capitol Hill.
Well, I don't have the numbers for energy demand and future growth. I do agree with the caller, at least from what I understand, that efficiency can take us a long way. I actually need to buy a new car myself, and I look around at my options, and it just makes me kind of frustrated because it seems like I can basically buy a new car that can get me a couple 28 miles to a gallon, you know, I can get a car that will do the job. But I think that with the time that's passed in the last 20 years or so, we ought to be able to do better with mileage, and we ought to be able to do better in heating our homes efficiently and cooling our homes efficiently. There are tools out there. I think people need to learn more about what's available.
Let me get another voice involved in the conversation. Rick Sprott is with us, the director for the Division of Air Quality for the Utah Department of Environmental Quality. Mr. Sprott, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Doug.
You want to react to what you're hearing so far?
Well, certainly what Dr. Mensch and his group have brought forward is exciting, and we're familiar with much of the literature. In fact, that's exactly why EPA cut the PM health standard in half this last year, as Judy pointed out earlier. I think one thing we need to clear up is that there's actually been very significant improvements in air quality in Utah over the last 30 years. The standards have gotten quite a bit more stringent, and I think the key here is that while they're, thank goodness, the air is a lot more healthy, it still is a major health problem, much as Dr. Mensch and his folks have pointed out. So that's what we need to focus the public attention on, that there's a lot of more work to do. My feeling is that once the issues and what needs to be done about them are well focused for the public and the legislature, there will be the political will to do that. We thought back in the 80s that there is no way we can solve the PM10 problem. It was just horrendous. Well, during these last inversions, the worst we've had in 30 years, we did not violate once the old PM10 standard. But the air was very unhealthy because we know now there's just a lot more serious medical impacts than we had before. So I think the challenge is to really focus and get good information to our elected officials so they can see what is at stake, what it will cost, discuss options that make sense for solving the problem and move forward. And there's a framework for that in the Clean Air Act. It takes a little time, but we're beginning that this summer with a task force to try and assess what it's going to take in terms of resources that we need. We've invited Dr. Mensch or one of his group to participate in that along with legislators, and we view this as one of the next steps that's very necessary, I think, in accomplishing some of the goals that Brian and his group want, as well as what's necessary for to marshal the political will, and I think that's a very interesting question you pose for the program.
Dr. Mensch?
We've been very pleased with several government officials' attempt to work with us, and Rick in particular, and we appreciate that very much. And I think everything that he has said is absolutely true. But I will also want to emphasize again, one of the main bits of scientific evidence that we now can say to the public with confidence is that there is no level of air pollution that is safe. There's no threshold below which there's no health effect. You might think of it as the air pollution in this valley is a little like sprinkling asbestos all over the atmosphere. Asbestos was recognized as a very toxic substance many years ago. And the government's response to that was not use a little less asbestos. It wasn't try and cut down on your asbestos use. It was, it's a serious problem, period. We're not going to use it anymore. In fact, we're going to pay to take it out of wherever it is. So we're saying you can view air pollution now as a similar sort of phenomenon. There's no safe level of air pollution. To whatever extent we can reduce air pollution, we will save lives and have a positive health impact and a positive economic impact that whatever the cost of our implementing that will virtually pay for itself.
Rick Sprott, I wanted to get you to react to that in the sense that is your message as urgent as it needs to be? It seems that Dr. Mensch and his colleagues is somewhat more urgent than what you're saying.
I think the key difference is the fact that I listen to my physician a lot more than I do to other regulators and bureaucrats, and we are delighted that we have physicians who are in a position of great trust and credibility with the community taking this message as their own. Dr. Mench and others are extraordinarily busy, so to take this on in addition to their medical assignments is pretty extraordinary. So that's why we think it's so important not to get in sidetracked and bogged down into, you know, details that, you know, we might have a little bit different view on, but focus on what the goal is, and that is exactly as they have said, to save lives, to, you know, prevent the economic losses that attribute to bad air or bad environment in general. So I'm very comfortable with that.
Rick Sprott is the director of the Division of Air Quality for the Utah Department of Environmental Quality. He joined us from his office. Mr. Sprott, thanks very much for the time.
Sure, welcome. Thank you.
Another voice in the conversation, finally, Tim Wagner is with us, the director of Utah Smart Energy Campaign for the Utah Sierra Club. He's joining us from his office in Salt Lake. Tim, not much time, but welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
Well, the question I wanted to get from you, again, whether or not we have the sort of social, cultural will, and ultimately the political will to really deal with this to the level it needs to be dealt with.
Well, certainly in the history in environmental issues and politics in the state would say no, but I think we're definitely living in a different time. And I think with Dr. Mench and his group, what they bring to this issue is, you know, for a lot of issues like this, people want to know about what it is exactly the issue is, how it affects them personally. And for the first time, we have a group with incredible credibility and the science to back them up who are now saying this is an issue that really does affect you and your family personally. And I think this is going to go a long ways towards mobilizing the public to put the needed pressure on elected officials and to change the political will to do something. So I applaud their efforts 100%. I think it's just tremendous what they're doing.
When you hear Representative Harper and his colleagues, what do you make of that kind of reaction? Again, the political sensibility.
Well, Representative Harper, I mean, he had some good things to say, but, you know, he pointed out a couple of things about the controversial issue of a moratorium on coal plants and stating that we have to be concerned about rural jobs. No one here is proposing closing down existing coal plants. We're just talking about the physicians are talking about putting a moratorium on new plants that may be built, and that's not going to affect current job levels. And I think it needs to be people need to remember that we have, by all estimates, about 15 to 20 years worth of coal left in the ground in Utah anyway, which means at some point we're going to be bringing all of our coal in from out of state. So the jobs dependent on that particular industry are tentative at best anyway, and because these are not renewable source jobs. So that argument just doesn't really wash with me as much as Dr. Mench's argument about this has a much stronger economic component of improving the health, improving the economic dexterity of the state of Utah, and providing for more jobs with renewable energy sources and on and on and on. I mean, the economic benefits are far outweigh the cost that I do believe that would be preventing any more coal plants from being in the state.
Tim Wagner with the Utah Sierra Club. Tim, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Dr. Brian Mench and Judy Faze, let me get you some offer some final thoughts. We're pretty much out of time, but let me just ask this finally. What's next? Again, there's this ongoing conversation about air quality. What do you think it's going to take to sort of change the dynamic to get some action? Judy Faze, what do you think?
I think it's already happening. Again, there's a growing awareness, growing interest, and people feel as though they need to and are willing to speak out and ask for change.
Doctor?
I had a high school friend of mine call me the other day who is a very capable attorney, but I didn't know because I hadn't been in touch with him for a couple of years just how capable he was. He's the managing partner of a very large law firm here in Salt Lake. He called me and basically offered the resources of his large legal firm to us because he and his family have experienced this last winter a constant bombardment of respiratory symptomatology. It's that simple. He personally is fed up with it enough that he's willing to do that for us because he sees what we're doing as perhaps the best hope we've had in a long time to actually change this.
So it comes down to people feeling personally invested, being personally affected.
I think so. That's what has driven most of the people that have contacted us with offers of help to do so.
What's next for you and your organization?
Well, we intend to take this message to as many avenues of public dialogue as we possibly can. We intend to present it to church leaders, to civic leaders, to business leaders. We intend to perhaps make some more private presentations of the one we made to Governor Huntsman to other key business leaders and religious leaders, and try and convey to them that we think this is not only a serious health issue, it's a moral issue. If we're not protecting our young children from this kind of damage, then what kind of a society are we?
People want to get in touch with you. How do they go about that?
Well, we were meeting last night to figure out how we do that, because we don't have a building, we don't have phone lines, we don't have a website. But they're welcome to call me at the surgery desk at LDS Hospital and leave a message for me, and either someone on our staff or myself will get back to them as soon as possible. And that number at the surgery desk at LDS Hospital is 408-3340, and they can leave messages for me, and we'll get back to them.
And when you get a website, pass that along, and we'll put it on our website as well.
We certainly will.
Thank you. Okay. Dr. Brian Minch, thank you very much for joining us. Judy, thanks.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program directed by Mike Anderson, produced by Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.